Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life podcast. My guest today is Doug Etzler. Doug is the head boys basketball coach at Crestview High School in Convoy, Ohio. Doug has a remarkable basketball journey that saw him complete a stellar high school career right there at Crestview High School, playing for his father, Ray Etzler, the legendary head coach for whom the gymnasium is now named. And Doug went on to play 4 years of basketball at The Ohio State University before starting his teaching and coaching career after a short stint playing basketball overseas. He's been the head boys basketball coach at Taze Valley High School and now at Convoy Crestview for the last 4 years. I hope you'll enjoy my conversation about basketball and life with Doug Etzler of Crestview High School. Doug, thanks for joining me this morning. I know we had talked about this on and off, and when the podcast relaunched, you were one of the first guys that I thought about having on, just because the podcast is about basketball stories, and I'm not sure how many people I can have on that have a better story than yours. How you doing?
I'm doing great, John, and really glad to have an opportunity to be on with you. I know we actually had talked right around the time you took the Ada job, actually, about doing this, and obviously that different route for you kind of interrupted this, but it's been awesome having a chance to listen to the different coaches you've had on, and I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I haven't had much of an opportunity since that Ada thing happened in 2020 and 2021 to tell some people how much I appreciate their support of me, but you and I had a couple conversations during that time that about what was going on that not a lot of people knew at the time, and I guess I don't need to publicly, but I will say thank you for the way that you supported me during a really difficult time. And you get through tough stuff, and you realize that the basketball community is a lot more important to you than you realize, and not because of the basketball side of it.
Yeah, I'll be honest, when everything went down there for you, I was excited for you to have a chance to get back into the coaching, have a chance to coach your son. And, you know, obviously it was a quick, you know, do I do it, do I not do it type moment for you, but glad you had an opportunity to do that, and glad you reached out to me and asked me, you know, my advice. Not that my advice matters a whole lot, but just to pick different people's brains. But I obviously did a great job with what you had that year, and glad to see you back on the sidelines that year.
It was certainly worth it. I wouldn't trade it. I'd change some things if I could, but looking back on it, I think everything happens for a reason, and the way it unfolded allowed it to be a pretty special time, and I just appreciate you and a lot of the other guys, but certainly your input was valuable. And so you talked about coaching my son. We're going to talk a lot about your story and get into playing for your dad, get into coaching your son, the whole full circle feel of that, the wonderful experience that you guys had this past season, but that's all part of just your journey. So I'm sure a lot of the people that are going to listen to the podcast are very familiar with your name and maybe even familiar with your story, but I'm sure some aren't that familiar either. So You're a guy I've known for better than 30 years now, so I don't want to assume too much as we talk. We'll talk about everything in your story, but if you wouldn't mind, just share a little bit about your background, growing up, your high school career, and really as you go through it, just the spots along the way that kind of led you to feel like coaching was maybe going to be your thing.
As far as background goes, grew up in small town Ohio. Van Wert, Ohio area, so small rural northwest. I went to Crestview High School, which is a Division IV, very small high school. Like I said, very rural high school. Had an opportunity to play for my dad. My dad was the head coach there for, I believe, 28 years. And just had, you know, if I look back now, just awesome memories of my high school career, having an opportunity to play for him and be under his leadership. And obviously he has played a huge role in me doing what I do now. You know, I grew up a basketball coach's kid in the gym all the time, a basketball junkie, and around it as a little kid, and then growing up being around it, and then just being in the gym with him, going scouting with him, watching games with him, is kind of just, you know, I look at my life, it's kind of just what I am. It's what I've done my whole life. And he just played a huge role into, I think, me wanting to be a head coach and having an opportunity to do some of the things that I watched him do throughout his career. But obviously, you know, being around it from a young age, it's kind of just your way of life. It's kind of all I knew. My mom was a teacher also, so I was always at the school. that's all I kind of grew up knowing. So obviously that kind of led me to be a high school basketball coach, a high school teacher, and fortunate enough to be back in my hometown. But after my high school years, I played 4 years of basketball at Ohio State for Coach Randy Ayers, and great memories there too. I always tell everybody I was part of the really good Ohio State basketball teams. I had to play with Jimmy Jackson, Mark Baker, Jamal Brown, Chris Gent. You know, we had an opportunity to play in the final eight game against the Fab Five, almost made it to a Final Four. And then by the time I graduated, we kind of were on very hard times where we had several guys get kicked off the team, and just things were a lot different when I graduated than when I got there. But I wouldn't change it for anything. Great memories of Ohio State, still connected with the program a little bit. Fortunate enough to have a nephew that's playing there. So just kind of full circle then, get into coaching. And then luckily enough, I ended up back in my hometown and coaching at my alma mater. And just kind of in a nutshell, just kind of lived a basketball life the whole time growing up until now.
Well, it's interesting because while our paths crossed really early, we were both young then at that time. And so I knew at that time that's kind of where my life was headed, what I wanted to do. And I admired what you had, you know, playing for your dad, playing in a tradition-rich program, and then obviously going on to college. There's several things I'd like to ask you about. First is maybe the challenge of playing in the Crestview program for your dad, because your program was tradition rich. Your dad is legendary. And at the same time, while your dad is legendary, he might be the most down to earth guy I've ever met in all my life. I don't think I've ever met a guy I used to tell this story to kind of make a point to people, but I also tell it to remind myself that, I mean, I didn't go to Crestview games ever that if I was leaving the building, your dad was sweeping somewhere. He was sweeping a stage. He was sweeping a floor. He was serving the district that he lived in, and those kind of things stand out to me. But when you come into the program as a really talented, really kind of ahead of your age type thing as a freshman, you were ready to play varsity basketball on a team that was ready to win. Were there challenges to that, difficulties in it? What do you recall about getting your high school career started? Because you were going to play early and you were going to play a lot, and there were going to be high expectations.
Yeah, I'll be honest, you know, as a kid going through it, you don't even think about all the outside stuff as far as your dad being a coach and the decisions he had to make as far as how early do you play your son. And at a young age, we had a really good team. And I'll be honest, I was so fortunate that the guys I played with, the leaders we had on our team that time, our senior class, I had a chance to play with Brett Norris. Mike Bone was a senior for us then. And those guys just took me under their wing. You couldn't have asked for a better situation for a young kid that was going to be a freshman in a program that's, you know, pretty good. We've had a lot of success, and then we're expected to be really good my freshman year. As far as the way they embraced me and took me and involved me in everything. And that summer, you know, obviously being a freshman, you can't drive. And they came and picked me up for everything. You know, anytime we had an open gym, anytime they were going to go to play, they came and got me. And I'll be honest, it's kind of, you know, I don't think people know a lot about it, but my first couple games, I played both JV and varsity. So I was playing two quarters of JV and two quarters of varsity at the time. And I think we got to game about four or five, and the group of seniors at that time went to my dad. I had a meeting with my dad and basically asked him, if I wasn't his son, would I be playing full-time varsity at that time? Because they thought I should be, and that doesn't always happen on a team when you get older guys to embrace the younger guys like that. And it was because of that that I became a full-time varsity player. So I was extremely fortunate. I just had great guys above me that were great leaders, one of the best for our program, but basically embraced me and showed me the right way to do it. It kind of taught me as an older player then, as I got through high school, that's what I needed to do to our younger guys. I had an opportunity. My brother was a freshman when I was a senior, and it's different because he was in my house, but you know, same type of thing. I got to make sure that he's accepted and he's ready to go for us so that when he's a senior, he's ready to do the same type of thing. So I'm very, very blessed. Obviously, I have great memories of playing for my dad, but I also have great memories of my teammates, and it was just an awesome experience all around, playing for my dad, playing at Crestview, just very, very blessed through my high school years.
Well, you know that when you and I met, it was largely because you were playing head-to-head against my twin brother, and the things that we're going to remember might not be things that you remember, but I will say this. There was a tendency, at least during the regular season part of things, that if people wanted to, let's say, for example, face guard you and try to keep you from touching it, there were times when your dad was content to run you to the corner and just play 4-on-4. We really appreciated those times that he took that approach. He didn't really do that much in the districts in the tournament, which was a different deal. But the time that we got to watch you compete was valuable to us. I think you brought the best out of my brother without any question whatsoever. And the way your high school program operated, I think, was the things you just told me are not things I would have known. They are things I would have assumed based on how I watched the culture of that program evolve and play out in front of me. Even as a kid, I was impressed with the, I don't know what the right word is, the comfort level that the upperclassmen and the underclassmen had with each other, and the way that guys communicated on the floor was always really special. But you spent 4 years in a great high school program, and I think I always wanted to ask you about this and never got the opportunity to. Probably where your high school career began to really change, and we say that now in this day and age, if I made this statement, we would all assume that's the way it has to be. But when it was 1989, 90, 91-ish, that time frame, it wasn't very common to say your high school career really started to change because of AAU. But I think it's a fair statement that your profile really did change because of AAU, correct?
No doubt about it. You look at, even though traditionally Crestview's had some great basketball teams, we've had great basketball players go through to get to the next level and play college basketball anywhere. It's just not like there were a lot of colleges coming to Crestview to scout. I mean, we're a small town, rural. We're out there in the sticks. So you were not having an opportunity to showcase yourself in front of the college coaches because of where we were located. And it's a different age now. You know, no social media and highlights and all the different things that student athletes have available to them now. We grew up in an era where that stuff wasn't happening. So I was fortunate enough to play for Greg Mock out of Lima. And AAU was different back then, too. It wasn't like there were teams all over the place. There were just a few teams in our area, and I was fortunate enough to play with some really good players. I mean, I look back, my best team that I played on, we had Matt Otto, who played at Bowling Green, John Jacoby, who went on to play at Toledo, Rod Cook, who played at Kent State, and Sean Pugsley. And I just had an opportunity to play with some great kids that I would have never played against. And those were guys I didn't even play against during the season because they were all from bigger schools. But having the opportunity to play with them and Coach Mock really promoting us and getting us in tournaments that were going to be in front of college coaches was hugely valuable. I mean, obviously, like you said, nowadays, that's just what you do. You get done with high school season, you go right into AAU. Well, it was even different back then because I think most of my AAU stuff took place in June because I was a part of the group that when we went to summer camps as a team, you know, June now is high school basketball time. That's when your team gets together and does stuff. We couldn't play as a team then. We went, I remember going to Delva St. John's playing camp at the time, and you could only have two players from a school on each team. And I played for different coaches from the community that were at the camp, and it was neat. It was different than what I've experienced as a coach. But yeah, AAU has played a huge role and got me out in front of coaches. And then that allowed me to have an opportunity to have them come to Crestview and see me play because of what I did AAU was.
Well, just for shits and giggles, one of these days we're going to record a podcast episode where all we talk about is your Ohio State experience. I'm being serious. That sounds funny, but I'm dead serious. I think that would be we could do an hour on just that. But I did want to touch on it briefly. I can remember pretty early on in your time at Ohio State, I was a student at Ohio Northern, and several of the guys on the team at Northern that I worked with every day, we all decided to make the drive down one time for an inter-squad. I think you guys played in Larkins Hall. Inter squad scrimmage. I don't remember what year you would have been, but it would have had to been either freshman or sophomore year. And I just remember you got your nose bloodied pretty good. I think maybe Gent or somebody ran over you, but you were out there battling with guys that were all American caliber players on a team that you said, you know, was going to be one game away from the Final Four. I've never been to any level of college basketball where a player didn't have the experience where there was doubt early on about whether or not it was the right place, the right thing, or whether or not they wanted to continue doing it. Did you experience any rough patches early on in Columbus? And what was it that kind of sustained you through those, if they existed?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. My freshman year was just a valuable basketball learning experience because I came into a team that was expected to do really well. I mean, we'd won Big Ten the year before, had a good, I think they were the number one seed in the NCAA tournament. And we have a lot of those guys coming back, pretty much everybody coming back besides Perry Carton. So we're going to be really good, you know, as long as everyone stays healthy. And you're coming in as a high school kid that's used to playing pretty much area. And I tell everybody, I went there kind of knowing I'm not going to play a lot, but not knowing how little I get. 50 minutes total my freshman season. So
can you repeat that? You cut out just for a second there. 50 minutes?
50 minutes total. So, I mean, like I said, that's two high school games. And I played 50 minutes total. And that's on a team that's really good. So we had some games early that we're beating teams by a lot. And I'm still only getting just, you know, 3, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes a game. And that's really hard for anyone. And I don't think people understand the level, no matter where you go and play college basketball, the level of talent that's there. You know, I tell my son this all the time. You're going to Iowa Northern, and a lot of people, they don't respect Division III college basketball. These are the best players from their high school all going to Iowa Northern to play, and now, pump that up to Ohio State when I was going in there, and it was an experience, and it was hard. You wonder what people are thinking about you back home, you know, and you're not getting to play. People thinking that you're not very good, and you have all that doubt in your mind, and you got to battle through that and know that you have a role in your team. And, you know, I tell everybody my freshman year, my role, it was amazing. And you don't know this going into it, but I was, you know, basically a scout team player. And when we're getting ready for Indiana, I'm an Indiana guy, and I'm running the point guard for Indiana. I'm trying to do the tendencies that he has on the court and trying to learn their offense in a day or two to get our guys that are going to play valuable minutes in the game ready. And that's a whole new experience. And it's hard. It's hard for anyone to go through because everybody wants to play. Everybody believes they should be playing, and I'll be honest, I wasn't one of the guys that thinks I knew going in, I'm not better than Mark Baker, but I would love to play a few minutes and give it, you know, a backup support to him and get a few more minutes than what I was getting. But, you know, I knew every day I'm going against this guy's really good, and I'm not used to that in high school because I always thought I was the best player out there. So yeah, it was really, really tough that first year, but it was also really fun. I mean, we went to the Final Eight. As far as pressure goes, you know, getting ready for the game, I knew what the other team was doing, but more probably than what we were going to do because I was on the scout team at the time. And that was hard, but I think it was a valuable experience, and I think it really has helped me as a coach because I see that side of it too. I got to make sure I understand as a coach that I got guys on the team that are going to play that same role that I played that year, and I got to make sure I keep them engaged and keep them, you know, their hunger, their want to continue to improve, because that was my goal after my freshman year. It's like, what do I got to do to get on the court? It wasn't a matter of, I don't want to do this anymore. What do I got to do more of so I can get on the court, so I can be the next Mark Baker for Ohio State? And I knew after me coming in, Greg Simpson's coming in. So it's not like they're not recruiting people. They're recruiting people to come in and take Mark Baker's spot along with me. So, yeah, I would say a lot of doubt my freshman year. But it got better. I played more, started actually my first half of the season, my sophomore year, but then it was tough again because I'm playing behind Greg Simpson, who's a year behind me, and more doubt, you know, okay, do you stay at Ohio State? You know, do I want to play, but I'm also at my dream college. So what's the best decision? And I'll be honest, I just sitting down, talking with my family, thinking things over, praying about things, you know, I think overall I couldn't have made a better choice of staying at Ohio State. I think it's opened a tremendous amount of doors for me, basketball wise, teaching wise, but great experience at Ohio State, but it wasn't all rosy. It wasn't all easy, that's for sure.
when you walk out of there and you're ready to start your career, I guess I've always kind of wondered this as well. To grow up the way you did, immersed in the game with the dad as a coach, did you feel like you wanted to, or were you ready to be a head coach early? Did you want to pursue high school coaching? Was college coaching ever an option for you? What was your kind of plan of attack as you approached graduation, looking toward that career?
And, you know, I'll be honest, I always knew that I wanted to be involved with basketball from a coaching standpoint. But growing up, you know, seeing it as a young age, all the different things my dad had to do that were not just the X's and O's of coaching. And then, you know, college-wise, it was something I thought of pursuing, but the recruiting part of things and being away from home all the time, though, that was something I didn't know if I wanted to really be involved to that extent to where it was all basketball. But from a head coaching standpoint at the high school level, I just didn't know if I was ready to deal with all the paperwork that you have, you know, the scheduling, the playing time issues that you have with parents. I knew I wanted to be involved, but I thought it was probably better for me to be involved as an assistant so I could focus more on being engaged with the kids and let the head coach deal with all that other stuff that goes around with it. So I didn't know, I mean, when I first got started, if I ever wanted to actually be a head coach. I knew I wanted to be involved in it, but I didn't know if I wanted all that extra stuff that comes along with being a head coach.
I'm going to guess you're still not sure some days.
every season when the season starts and you got all the preseason stuff that you got to get done and you just want to get to the basketball part. Yeah, every season you're like, oh my gosh, I'm just ready for this part to be over so we can just focus on the basketball portion of it. That's for sure.
We'll talk a little bit, if you would, about your early experiences or experience as an assistant coach and some of the more impactful things that you experienced during that stretch of time.
Very, very fortunate. The first year I got back from playing, actually went to England for a year and played for a season there. So when I came back, I was a part of a program in Ohio State that we had to get our master's degree in order to be certified to teach. I was the first class to go through that. So I did 4 years, got my bachelor's, but I didn't have my certificate to teach yet. And then I played a year over in England, came back, and I had to get my master's. So I actually stayed home, and I commuted to Lima and took my graduate master's courses at Ohio State Lima and had an opportunity to reconnect with Brett Norris, who was at Delta St. John's at the time, and in a volunteer role. I wasn't a full-time. I wasn't there every day because of my class schedule. I didn't sit on the bench with him, but I had an opportunity to be around him a lot in practice, and then he gave me a lot of scouting duties that I had an opportunity to go watch teams play for him. But I didn't sit on the bench, so I didn't get engaged in that part of it with him. But I learned a lot from Brett. You know, Brett had played with me in high school, so I had a great relationship. I actually worked with him outside. We both worked for the county of Van Wert when I was a senior, so I was around him a lot growing up with him, and then being around him as a head coach and just noticing the discipline, the organization, the fundamentals, just the little things that go into making a basketball team great. I thought Brett did a great job with that. My next coaching experience, I got a teaching job, my first teaching job at Lima Shawnee. So I was an assistant under Jeff Easton and was fortunate enough to hit Shawnee when they were hot. We had a great group of kids that went through, had a great relationship with Coach Easton. He allowed me to be very, very involved in the program. I was a varsity assistant for a year and JV coach for 4 years under him. And obviously learned a lot of things. It was different than working with Brett, you know, different philosophies, different ways that they approach things, but both were really good at what they did. You know, Coach Houston had great relationships with his players as far as getting them to play as hard as they could. And then we had a good group that was able to get up and down the court, so I was able to be involved with a different style of basketball. We played more full court than what Brett did at Delta St. John's, where he was at half court. You knew they were going to be solid man-to-man defense. Coach Easton was get after it full court, run and jump. It was a different style, and both of those styles fit the programs that they had, and I was glad I had an opportunity to learn under both of those guys before I headed out. I actually took a couple years off of teaching, went to Columbus, and then got back into teaching at Taze Valley. Served as an eighth grade coach for a year, and then was a varsity assistant for a year before I took over as a head coach at Taze Valley. And I served under Brian Wolf for a year there when he was the head coach, and then 14 years as a head coach. So very, very blessed to have some good mentors, and very blessed that I saw different styles, because I've kind of blended all of that into what I do now.
So let me ask you, we got about 5 minutes before we take our break, and I'll let you answer this, that as you're doing that and you're working for Brett and then you're working for Jeff, and are you starting to formulate like an idea of when I'm a head coach, I'll be able to piece together different parts of this? And the reason I ask that is if you're starting to think that way then, and then you mentioned it, you walked away from the education profession for a couple of years. Did you always think maybe you were still coming back to coaching?
When I walked away, I'll be honest, I didn't walk away because I was tired of basketball or tired of teaching. I'll be honest, I was kind of pursuing the money side of things. I got into sales, and then what my goal was at that time, I was hoping we're moving back to Columbus. I'm going to be away from basketball, but hopefully make enough money that my wife can stay home and she can be a full-time mom and I can just support. And I knew from a financial standpoint, money-wise, I wasn't going to be able to provide that as just a teacher and coach at the high school level. So kind of walked away from it, not any tiredness of basketball by any means, just kind of more of a family type situation. And I'll be honest, I was away from it for 1 year where I didn't do any basketball at all. And it was like, this isn't what I do. This isn't what I'm used to doing. So I didn't know if I'd ever go back. And after a year, I knew I had to get back in it. I still had my sales job for 1 year and I coached the eighth grade. And then after that, I'm like, I kind of just knew I'm not made to be a sales guy. I'm meant to be in the classroom, meant to be on the basketball court. And I was fortunate enough to get hired on at Taze Valley and was there for 15, 16 years and had, basically a great opportunity to start my own program, do my own thing. And I'm very fortunate. But I think that the year away from basketball made me realize, this basketball is something that's a part of you and something that you need to do. And I was really eager to get back in it. That's for sure.
Well, Doug, I changed the name of the podcast to Basketball and Life, because I think those things that you just described are valuable things for people to hear about. And I like the stories, but obviously I think there's value in what you just said, is realizing that you got to make decisions sometimes in life that aren't about you and they're about other people and they're about bigger plans. But there's also, I think, an absolute truth in the fact that God puts in us what we do and what we are. And I think shying away from that and running away from it probably isn't really a very sound way to approach things. I've done the same thing. I've made decisions to take me away from basketball because I felt like it was more responsible to do something else. And I always had a good reason for it, but it never leaves me or never has left me. And hearing you say that, I think it basically affirms a lot of the things that I've experienced in my life. And I think some other young coaches may as well. We're just shy of needing to take a break. If you don't mind, I'd like to go ahead and take our break now, and then we'll come back and get into your becoming a head coach and the program you took over at Taze Valley and talk through that experience.
Okay, sounds good.
Just want to take a quick second and interrupt the podcast for a minute to remind you that our new platform for the podcast is Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you have an opportunity to make a donation to the podcast if you would be inclined to do so. Thanks for considering any sort of donation. One-time, monthly, or other regular donations are certainly welcome. Spotify for Podcasters is our platform, and they're providing an easy option for you to do so just by clicking the link at the end of the episode. Thanks for your consideration. And now back to the podcast. All right, Doug. So, the journey through your time as an assistant and to Taze Valley, tremendous value for you. And we touched on the different experiences, the different ways of playing, the different styles of head coach that you worked under. All of that's building toward now your first opportunity to become a head coach. I always ask nearly everybody that comes on the podcast this question. Number one is, when did you know you were ready to be a head coach? And number two, how did the opportunity at Taze Valley evolve and present itself for you?
As far as knowing when I was ready, I'll probably say is from a X's and O's and having a background knowledge of what it takes to be a head coach. I probably knew at Lima Shawnee that I could do it. And then, like I said, I stepped away from doing it, the whole coaching thing. And then my first year back, and that actually was a year off, I knew I needed to get back into it. And then as an eighth grade coach, being involved in the lower levels, at that point, I knew, you know, this is something that if something presents itself, it's something I would really like to do. And I'll be honest, the situation at Taze Valley was interesting how it all shook out. I was in sales. I'm coaching eighth grade. The next year, I get on as a phys ed teacher in their middle school. And when I was an eighth grade coach, I told the coach at that time, because of my sales job, I really couldn't do more than junior high level. I needed to be at a lower level where it's not as involved with scouting and the time commitment that comes from being away. You know, I'm not scouting at the junior high level. I'm just getting ready for our games, getting our guys prepared for the system that we're running. But when I get into the teaching role of it, where I'm going to be able to put more time into it, I was fortunate enough to be asked to be the varsity assistant. And then after doing that for a year, our head coach got let go. So then it was I felt pretty loyal to our head coach at the time. He took me on as an eighth grade coach, allowed me to move up as a varsity assistant, and our school lets him go. Do I even apply for the head job here? You know, is this right to do after being under the head coach? And I was a part of it and the decisions that he made and, you know, helped him along the way. Do I really want to get involved in something that, you know, they let him go? So it was a tough decision. I talked to a lot of people in the school system there. I had an opportunity to, one of my assistants was going to be a guy by the name of Trevor Youngkin, who played there. And he was a Taze Valley guy, a young guy, played at Otterbein. And he's like, you know, I want to get involved, but I don't want to be the head coach, but I would really like to coach under you. So I don't say he talked me into it, but, you know, I knew I was ready. It just wasn't sure, do I want to do it here because of the circumstances of how I was going to be hired and taking the place of someone that I had worked under. And I just didn't know if it was the right fit. And, you know, I'm glad I did it now, looking back on things. And I was fortunate enough to have great assistants under me while I was there. But it was a tough situation taking my first head job, to be honest.
And so let me ask you this question as well, because, again, most of our listeners probably don't know this, but not only is Taze Valley your first opportunity to be a head coach, but you're also kind of that's your wife's home, right?
Yeah, we moved back to Grove City first, and she took a job at Pickerington. And then the next year she gets on at Taze Valley while I'm still doing my sales job. And then I was fortunate enough to get a job at Taze Valley. So we are in her home community, in her hometown, and yeah, you know, back home for her. And we eventually moved into the school district, and I served there for 15 years as a teacher and coach, and have great memories there. But yeah, we're in her hometown, and you know, living the I always say still small town life. Asheville's a really small town, but the school district was a small Division I school. So when you think of Crestview being Division IV, anytime you hear Division I, how big things were, Taze Valley was a really small, big school, if that's the best way. It's a country school, but it was Division I, which made things pretty tough.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about this more in just a minute. But again, for people who might not be familiar, you know, if you're a small Division IV school, the Division IV schools you're going to play against can't get huge.
Exactly.
If you're a small Division I school, the D1s you got to compete with can get – it's limitless.
It is. I know every level has their complaints, but I knew coming back home, being at Crestview, the difference in size of the opponents I was going to play in the tournament was only going to be a handful of kids. When I was at Taze Valley, I think we had like 406 kids the first year I was there. So way bigger than Crestview. But when you play a Gahanna who has 900 kids, you know, we're half the size of that Division I school. And I knew it was going to be a different challenge. And the type of athlete we had at Taze Valley was a little bit different than some of the OCC schools that we faced during the tournament.
You talked about the size of the school, the district itself. Talk a little bit about the program that you took over as a head coach, and what did you prioritize in terms of what you wanted to establish as a head coach?
Well, I'll be honest. When I took over, the program was in a rough shape talent-wise. We weren't very good. I think as an assistant coach, we won 4 or 5 games the previous year, me being a head coach. And at the junior high levels, for a while, we hadn't been very good. I was fortunate enough that the 8th grade group, when I was a varsity assistant, was pretty good. So, you know, I knew my freshman group my first year was going to have some talent coming up through the system, but traditionally Taze Valley for a while had not been very good. I want to say between league titles, when I first won it in 2011, the Mid-State League title, it was a 20-year span where we had not won the league, and we were the biggest school in our conference. You know, we're the biggest school, so you think with the size that we had, we would be able to put some competitive teams together, but we weren't very competitive at the time I took over. I was fortunate enough that I was going to have a good freshman class. So I think the biggest thing for me was building things from the ground up as far as making sure our youth were involved. I wanted to get, you know, have great camps, get those young kids to the games as early as I could, making sure our junior high programs were aligned with our varsity programs so that they had a system that they were growing up into and things that when they got to our level, it wasn't going to be brand new. And, you know, just kind of starting things from the ground up. What do I want Taze Valley basketball to look like? And I need to make sure I install that at the youngest levels so that when they come up, it's just not a brand new experience for them.
So I'm always curious about this because I remember being a young coach and taking over my first job. And the only thing I knew was the way we did it when I was in college. That's all I knew. I was 23 years old and I knew what we did in college. And in a lot of ways, it was kind of bad luck for the program I took over because that's the way we were going to have to do it. I didn't have a lot of options. That you mentioned having multiple different experiences that gave you an insight into some different ways to operate. So when you finally get to decide, I've got to determine what 32 minutes of Taze Valley basketball is going to look like. Where did you anchor in to start with?
I think, you know, looking back on past experience, I probably tried to model my program as much after what Coach Norris did at Delta St. John's. And doing that probably from a standpoint that I knew we weren't going to be the most talented team. So a half-court style of basketball where defensively we were going to try to be a solid half-court man-to-man team. And then offensively, I don't want to say slow the ball down, but we were going to make sure we took really, really good shots, which was a lot different than what we did at Shawnee as far as playing fast. Not that we didn't take good shots, but we had really good players that could really shoot the ball there. So I knew going into it with the talent level that we had that I probably was going to need to slow the game down a little bit. And I don't see more of a pounding, physical, I don't say even ugly style of basketball that I wasn't used to as a player. We didn't play that way at Ohio State at all. But as a coach, what gives yourself the best chance to win in every game you play? That's kind of how I started things. And that has completely evolved. And one thing I've learned as a head coach at the high school level is you got to meet the needs of the players that you have. The way we played this year at Crestview was not the way I first started coaching because we had better talent this year. We had guys that could really shoot the ball. So I think at the high school level, it's different than college because college, you can recruit kids to fit your system. At the high school level, you got to fit your system to the type of players you have. So it's evolved, but when I first started, it was more of a pound it, half court. We had some good big guys. We were going to try to get the ball inside and play a more high percentage game of low in the paint shots and not shooting a ton of threes. And this year we shot a ton of threes and got up and down the court. So the way I started is really evolved from then.
Well, and so I want to touch on that a little bit, your evolution as a coach, because your time at Taze Valley started with, I would say, I think it's fair to say pretty low expectations, but you aren't a guy who's going to embrace low expectations for very long. And you had some success. Talk about your evolution as a coach in terms of your philosophy of preparation, your philosophy and style of play. You talked about fitting it to your personnel, but did you have the opportunity while at Taze Valley to experiment with some things and do different things as your talent level improved? Or were you just, we are who we are and this is how you have to be successful here?
It evolved the whole time I was coaching at Taze Valley. I was fortunate enough that once we got it, we started my first year, we won 3 games. That's not very fortunate at all. Not a great way to start your career as a head coach, doing things the way you're doing. You're constantly, second guessing yourself because you're not winning. But fortunate enough that I had some good kids that were coming up in the program, and it evolved. By the time I left there, we would pick you up full court. We would switch screens. We would play some zone. Those are things I never did when I first started. We were straight man to man. We were straight half court. We were going to run our set motion offense, our set, sets that we were going to run. And at Taze Valley, I had a Division I player. The first year we won the league in 2011, I had a 6'8 center by the name of Nate Anderson that went on to play UNC Wilmington. So at that point, we were getting the ball into him all the time. And then by the time I left my last year there, we had great guards. So we were playing a little bit more up-tempo and getting after people and picking up full court and shooting the ball in transition and just evolving with the talent. Constantly picking up things at clinics and watching other coaches and how they were doing things. And, you want to win. So what's the best way for us to win? I don't think at the high school level, the best way is always doing things the same way. And Taze Valley evolved, and it's evolved in the 4 years I've been at Crestview for sure.
Well, let's kind of begin that journey at Crestview. The Taze Valley experience, 15 years there. Look, I'm surprised by very few things in the world anymore. Hell, I'm 51 years old, and I've seen about as much good and bad as you can see in all walks of life. I was blown away when it was announced that you were going to be the coach at your alma mater and coming back to Crestview. I would imagine on the heels of the season that you just finished, you've had to have had a number of experiences of reflecting on the decision and the process that's played out the way that it has. But if you wouldn't mind, for the people that are listening, how does that come about when you're at a place 15 years, you're in your wife's hometown? It's that feels like a lifetime deal there, and it changes really, really quickly for you. How did it happen?
It was really, tough decision family-wise and tough decision from is it the right thing to do-wise. Crestview was in great hands. Coach Best, his 7 years at Crestview, took Crestview basketball to all new heights, and I had an opportunity to pretty much, midway through his career, probably we were scrimmaging every summer, even sometimes in the fall, we would have one of our scrimmages together. So I had a little bit of a relationship with him. They're coming off a state title. So, it's not even in the back of my mind. I'd actually touched base with him the week that he resigned. On Monday, I sent a text to him and said, "Hey, I know you're just done with the state tournament. I've been done with the season for a while. But are we looking to get together this summer? I'm trying to finalize my summer plans and just wanted to see if that's something that you wanted to do." And he just sent a nice reply back. "Hey, I'm working through some things. I'll get back to you later this week." So I'm thinking he just won the state title. He's got a lot going on that's not just getting ready for his summer program and what the schedule is going to look like for him. And then on Wednesday or Thursday of that week, I get a text message from my sister-in-law saying, "Hey, Coach Best stopped out of her house today and he's going to resign tomorrow." And then the whole head starts spinning as far as, okay, these Crestview jobs are going to be open. We just had a really good season. Is that even something that's going to be a possibility? Would you entertain if it was a possibility? And it was a whirlwind how it happened. I got a call from Mrs. Coffee Mall, called our superintendent. We were going to be in Fort Wayne for an AAU tournament. I was able to meet with the administration, and it all happened really quick. And you don't know at the time, are you making the right decision? Your kids are in high school. Is it good to move them? There was a ton of things going through my mind, my wife's mind. We're moving from her hometown. If we would come back, we're going to move to my hometown. We've been in the area before. We know what basketball's like in Northwest Ohio. But the lure of coming back and being the head coach at my alma mater and having an opportunity to be in a successful program, it was just too big of a tug to not take the job. And obviously the way things have worked out, having an opportunity to do what we did this year, I guess things worked out about as good as it could. That's for sure.
Well, if it's not too, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but you mentioned before about decisions that you guys have had to make and talking about your college choice and whether or not to stay, and you involved your family. When you're making a decision as the head of a household, that's a whole different situation. I mean, you're obviously talking to your wife, and you said your kids were in high school. Was there trepidation or apprehension on their part about making the move? What was that like in working through that process with just your wife and your kids?
We sat down. We were actually at my parents' house for the weekend, and we've been offered the situation where, hey, you're going to be the head coach. We got a teaching job for you. We got a teaching job for your wife. So we sat down as a family, and I involved my kids in the decision-making process and talked to Lisa. Lisa knew how important basketball was to me, and my kids, obviously, growing up kind of the same way I grew up. Both parents are teachers. Your dad's the head basketball coach. They had, especially my son, he had been around enough Crestview basketball games through the tournament runs, watching his cousins play. He knew what it was all about. He was crazy excited. It was probably a little tougher for my daughter, who was going to be a junior. So she's involved in a really good program at Taze Valley. They were league champs. I think they were district semifinalists her sophomore year. They have a great young group coming back. She has great friends that she's grown up with school the whole time she's been a Taze Valley student. And I knew it was going to be a tougher move probably for her, but she had cousins here too. So it was a situation that she felt pretty comfortable that I'm not just going into a brand new school. She had a cousin that was going to be, two cousins actually, with Kaylin and Reagan that were going to be in her grade. So, you know, everybody was on board, which made it a lot easier, but it still was a huge decision, and it weighed on me. You know, you're going to get a chance to move home. You want everything to go right, and you don't know if it's going to. And I'll be honest, the first year of coaching, I was like, I don't know if I made the right decision. We're not very good. And I left a program that I had an opportunity to kind of build from the ground up, and I thought we were going to be pretty good again. But like I said, you look back, hindsight, I've been here for 4 years. My kids thrived at Crestview. You know, my kids have great friends here. My daughter is dating a guy that she's been dating since her junior year that is a great young man. My son had an opportunity to play in the Crestview program and be around Crestview schools for 4 years. And my wife is it's not her hometown, but she was here for 5 or 6 years at Ada and Lima Shawnee. She knows what Northwest Ohio basketball is all about. And as far as being what you, as a head coach, you need a wife that is on board. And I've been blessed to have, you know, the best opportunities coaching wise, but because my wife has been totally on board the whole time and been the best coach's wife that I could have ever asked for sure.
I had a conversation with a coach this week, and he said, you know, when you're going to become a head coach, you need your wife to be all right with it. And he stopped and he said, no, wait, you don't, your wife has to be all in. Like it won't work any other way. And I was blessed to teach on the same staff with Lisa for a couple of years early in her career when she was at Ada. And look, I have very few guys that do this podcast who don't refer to their wives as rock stars. If you're going to be a coach's wife, there's only one way to do it. And you certainly, I won't say you outkicked your coverage, but you were awfully, awfully blessed, my friend.
I definitely, no doubt about that. She is 100% on board with my coaching career. And like you said, everybody says it, but it is true. If your wife is not 100% all, you can't do it. I've been blessed that she is 100% all in. And I think it's been awesome for her to be a part of it as a coach's wife, but this year as a mom, and in the last 4 years as a mom, watching her son be a part of the program too, and this year being a senior mom and really involved in the program, I'm just glad that she had an opportunity to experience the level of success that we had this year as being a senior mom with involved in the program is what she's been.
Well, let's talk. I mean, I think maybe the most overused word in the English language is unique, because if you look up the definition of unique, there's just, it's one of a kind. So things can't be really unique or sort of unique, but it's borderline unique to describe the situation that you came into at Crestview from this standpoint. you got to be one of one in this regard. You left a job where you were coaching nephews to come to a job to coach nephews in completely different parts of the state. You are going to go into a program where your father had been a head coach for multiple decades. The gym is named after your dad. And that's the least amount of pressure that probably is on you, because you're coming in for a coach who's walking away after multiple state championships and a tremendous run that you just described. It took Crestview basketball to heights that they hadn't ever experienced. And when you do that, Doug, when you take that leap and you begin that process, it's not like it was when you took over at Taze Valley. It's a different position to be in, and you're a different man. You've got your own track record. You've got your own reason for confidence. I asked you before about what did you prioritize with your Taze Valley program taking over. What did it feel like for the Crestview move, and what did you prioritize in trying to get yourself established in a place that was, well, to be quite honest, just doing pretty damn well without you?
No doubt about just doing pretty good. You come into it with different expectations than when I had Taze Valley. Taze Valley, you're kind of building things from the ground up. At Crestview, you know, coming in, I don't say more than anything, I just like, don't screw things up. Things at Crestview are awesome. Just make sure you try to keep it to a level that's close to what Coach Best had done. You know, not every coach is going to win two state titles and then be a state runner-up. And, you know, going into it, I'm going to keep to his level. But just don't screw it up. Keep it to where it is very, very competitive and it's still Crestview basketball. And I think that's the main thing. And it kind of started, number one, with getting my staff. You know, I'm coming back home, but I haven't been home for a long time. I was at Shawnee for 5 years. I'm in Taze Valley for 15 years. So it's a long time removed from Crestview basketball. And the coaching staff, I was fortunate, they all stayed on, you know, and you don't know that. You go off a state title. They had great ties with Coach Best. If they're going to stay on or not stay on, and that was the number one priority, was let's get people involved in our system, in our program, that our kids are comfortable with, so it's just not a crazy change for them. It's a change. They're going to have a new head coach, but at least has some consistency. And I was fortunate enough to have the exact same coaching staff that Coach Best had. So our kids had great relationships with them. And then when I sat down and talked with those guys, another thing, I'm not coming in here to reinvent things. It's not like my way at Taze Valley is the way we had to do things. With what we have in our program, I have a chance to watch some film, but we have all brand new players. We lost some pretty good players. I mean, you lose Javen going to Division I, Wade Sheets, Drew Klein. We lost some four-year starters. And with what we have coming back, my assistant coaches knew our program better than I did at the time, so I really leaned heavily on them the first year on how do we build this with the group that we have? What's the best way to go offensively? What's the best way to go defensively? And I was fortunate enough to have some good people around me that gave me some good guidance. And then once you're in the thick of things, you kind of put your own footprints into things. But I didn't want to change away a lot from what Coach Best was doing. I wanted things to stay pretty consistent and just put my imprints on things here and there, and then obviously now that I've been in longer, get my style and what I think fits our program. I've had an opportunity to work with different assistant coaches and had a chance to get a team through from freshman year all the way through. So it was a whirlwind, it was a change, but like I said, with the way things finished up this year, it's been a great move for me.
Well, it certainly has, and I want to spend some time talking about this year. You know, I don't know how many people do it anymore. It used to be really common that you built a 4-year plan or you built a 5-year plan. When you go into the situation that you did, and you talked pretty eloquently about being able to honor, acknowledge, and respect what was before you and still, you know, be confident enough to be who you are and make an imprint on the program. If you had to draw it up, Coach, I'm not sure you could do better than, hey, here's our 4-year process, and in year four, we're going to end up in the state Final Four. I don't know that's movie script kind of stuff, but if you would, talk about maybe the beginning of this last year, your fourth year, and maybe where the program had changed and had evolved into kind of what you envisioned and became yours, and how that dovetailed with the talent that you had and where you could take your team this year.
Just kind of looking back to our first couple years, first year at Crestview, we didn't have a lot of experience coming back, but we I can't say the cupboard was bare by any means, but to be honest, the first couple years, we really focused everything around Kalen. And we had some younger players. Everybody bought in. Everybody knew he's the best player in the gym every night. This is what we got to do. But it also, I want to say, limited some of our other kids and some of the things as far as growth, because they relied on Kalen so much. And I say that next year, our expectations in the program were still really high. We lost a lot of great seniors. We lost the Division I player, but we had a really good JV team. And I have a lot of guys that have played varsity now for 2 years that played as freshmen that probably weren't ready yet, but with what we had coming, they had to be thrown into the fire. So we had a lot of experienced guys that had to really blossom into new roles. And I think my senior group I had this year as juniors really developed into complete basketball players. And then by the time we were seniors this year, we were really, really confident. You know, as far as the way we ran things this year, it kind of goes back to the way I did things at Taze Valley as far as running a motion offense. We picked up a little bit more full court. I allowed them to have a little more freedom as far as shooting in transition. But we had pieces with how I wanted to play this year that really fit what we did. I mean, we ran a motion offense, and I had guards that could shoot it, had guards that could penetrate and get the ball to the basket and finish at the rim or kick out to guys that could shoot it. And then I had a really good post player that could finish around the basket. And as far as having, you know, the perfect mix of talent and then having unbelievably unselfish kids, I couldn't ask for more out of our group this year. I think we got the most out of our talent, but I think because they were all willing to be a star in their role, no one had to be the number one guy each and every night. Kalen had to do that for us when I first got here. This year, I think we had 7 different leading scorers throughout the season. I had 4 guys average right around 10 to 11 points. And because we had that type of team that no one had to be the superstar each night, we were kind of a tough team to scout. You don't look at each player and say, hey, these are all college-level players, but they're all pretty doggone good. They're all pretty good players, and we just tried to get them in situations where they made decisions freely within what we wanted them to do, and they didn't look over the shoulder if they made a mistake, and just be unselfish. Get the best shot every time. Make sure each time that we have good shooters, make sure we get a great shot, and it doesn't matter who it is each night that's getting that shot. And as a coach, you have, you know, what your idea is of a dream season. The group that I had this year, I had some underclassmen that were juniors this year that throughout my career would have been big time player starters for us. And this year they took a role of being a reserve player, and to get the whole team to buy into that, it was just incredibly special. And then you throw in the chance to have your son be a senior during that whole time. You know, you talk about a dream season for me. It was, you know, how you write it up, it couldn't have followed a script any better this year until the state final game. You know, that obviously was a different animal, but it was an awesome season. I had awesome parents, awesome players, and awesome assistant coaches, and everything worked out to what you would plan from 4 years till now. You couldn't have drawn a better script, and then things just played out about as perfect as they could have for me this year, that's for sure.
And if you wouldn't mind, I would like to kind of talk about what you touched on in that, as storybook as it was, the ending was rough, and I'm not going to, don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I think from a leadership perspective, that there is something valuable in having a dream scenario that ends up kind of nightmarish, and how you dealt with that.
You know, it was tough, and it wasn't one of those things going into that final game where it was a shocking, you know, I knew what happened could happen. It wasn't hey, this team is one of the best. It reminded me a lot of my freshman season as a player at Crestview, where we ran into Columbus Worley at the regional finals. I had a, you know, great team that I played on there, and we ran into one of, if not the best team in state when I played. And here we are again. I'm coaching, and we're going to run into one of the best teams in the state, not just in Division IV, but in the state. And the whole process, you know, let's get there, and then the toughest thing about the whole thing is we only had a day to get ready for it. You know, we win the game, we stick around and watch Richmond Heights play, and then we have one day to practice and get ready to play a team that's the best team that, as a coach, probably I've ever had an opportunity to prepare for. And how much can you cram into one day? And I remember at our practice talking to our assistant coach, and we're working on fundamental things as far as stepping through traps and being tough with the basketball, not even looking at X's and O's. And it was probably the first time all year where we didn't have an opportunity to really walk through what sets does Richmond Heights run, you know, because they really, they pick you up and turn you over, and they don't run a lot of sets. They're, so our preparation was a lot different. We needed a whole season to prepare for them. We had one day, but it is what it is. We knew we had an opportunity to have a chance to play them. I wanted our guys to go out and battle and give everything they have, and I think they did. It was just a matter of we needed them to not play very well. We needed to play our best game, and we didn't. And you want to talk about a perfect storm of going exactly opposite of what you want it to go like. That's how it was. We were down, I think, at midway through the second quarter, we had tied it up at 16, I think, and I'm saying, hey, we got a shot. And they go on a 10-0 run. We hit a half quarter at halftime to cut it to 9, and I'm thinking, hey, we're only down 9. We got a shot. Just keep it close to the fourth quarter, and if we keep it close, hopefully they tighten up. They have to win. We're not supposed to win. And then the third quarter starts, and they come out on fire. We couldn't make any shots. And snowballed, and it was one of those snowballs as a coach. It's like, we can't press this team. I can't get us out of it with changing the way we play, where some of the other teams that we matched up a little better with, we could. But I'm incredibly proud of the way our guys handled it. They knew they were up against a giant, and they went out and battled and gave it their best shot. And unfortunately, it unfolded in the way that we didn't get it done. And it stings that we didn't get it done. But the whole journey and experience was very, very special with this group.
Well, I can't even imagine how it was, and that's why I'm always, I don't know if curious is the right word, but I can be fascinated by the ways that you deal with adversity in the middle of what felt like a dream that just came to a halt the way it did. If it makes you feel any better, I had a similar experience once when Brandon Pardon and Frank Kill and Wes Dudgeon and the boys were at Lincoln View, and I had a pretty good Ada team, went over there and make a bucket at the half right before we go to the locker room to cut it to 25-17. I'm thinking, hey, could have been a lot worse. It's 8. We get the ball coming out. You know, we get it down to 2 possessions. Let's just see where we can go. And at the end of that quarter, I had taken 3 timeouts, and they had outscored us 35-0. and so I've been there, not on that stage, but I've been there, and there's no easy way to deal with it. Fortunately for me, I had a Saturday night game that I could point our guys toward, and we could get that taste out of our mouth. You all you had was a long bus ride. But I said this to Dave Bowen in Dayton at the tournament, and I'll say it to you now. I don't know how you didn't do it. I would have found the way in 24 hours. I would have had T-shirts printed up that said the People's Champs on the back. And I'd warmed up with them. And I'm not taking any shots at Richmond Heights. I'm really not. I know it sounds like I am, but that's a different animal. That's a different animal than what Division IV basketball has traditionally ever been any time in the history of the state. And it's certainly a different animal than the Division IV basketball that you grew up with, that I grew up with. And what most people would assume Division IV basketball to be, that's not that. And again, that takes nothing away from them. What they did was phenomenal. And you guys went through a tremendous experience that day. But at the end of all of that, it's my hope, my sincerest hope, that every guy that's involved with your program looks back with absolute, complete and utter pride over what you guys accomplished, because it was a remarkable year.
It was, and I think our guys will. I obviously Sting, and even for me, when we got back, you go back to school the next week, and everybody moves on, and you're kind of like, man, I can't get out of this funk. You know, you've been on this tournament wave of tremendously high emotions, and then all of a sudden, a crashing halt. You know, the wave just, the tsunami came down, and it ended the way we didn't want it to end. And it was hard for a while to process the whole thing. And it was a weird deal. We didn't have our program or our banquet until about a month after the season, because baseball was in full swing. And when do we have it? And how can we make sure everybody has a chance to get there? But in that month, having an opportunity to to reflect and be around the guys outside of basketball. And, you know, kids are resilient. And I think they understand that it's a special opportunity to get a chance to be there. Obviously, tremendously more special if you win it. But what they did throughout our season and our tournament run, the support we had from our community, I think that's something that they will always come back and remember. Stories that they have that are probably not even just all basketball stories. That's one of the special things I get out of coaching is you get a chance to be around kids once they're out of the program and come back. And we always try to invite our alumni back. And each Christmas we have guys in, and I had an opportunity over break last year to have our a lot of our 19 guys that won the state title. Coach Best is the last group that we had. Stick around with them for almost an hour after we got done with practice and just listening to them tell high school stories. I think that's the same thing that these guys will experience as they get older. They'll come back and be a part of that as the alumni. And I think the things that they remember aren't going to be that last game. It's going to be the whole process. And I think it's going to be something that they remember in a special way.
Well, I certainly would hope so. And I know you to use that phrase, remember in a special way, the experience by itself is damn near unique, and it's at least a very small number of people that get to experience it. But you got to experience it with your son as one of your starting players. And Doug, you've coached your son since he was little. I mean, you guys have done the AAU thing, and he played his whole high school career for you. So you've coached him in a lot of circumstances. And I heard you mention that it's so hard to, in the moment, enjoy what you're going through when you're making that kind of magical run because there's always something next. And I hear every coach that's ever talked about it say, particularly guys that do it again, I'm going to make sure I enjoy the experience this time. And I always want to follow up and after it's over and say, hey, did you? Because I don't know how you do. I don't know how you find the time to not prepare as well as you can prepare and take in those moments. But it's got to be almost doubly as difficult not to want to take a moment and soak it in because you're coming to the end of a time when you're not going to coach your son ever again. Can you talk a little bit about your lifetime spent coaching your son and how you tried to manage all that goes into that in the midst of dealing with what was an absolutely magical experience?
I'll start back from when he was really little. Like you said, I had an opportunity to coach Gavin. Probably, I think we started when he was like second or third grade with the AAU thing. And it was kind of weird you wouldn't come full circle, but we actually had his first AAU experience with Brett Norris being his head AAU coach. And he had, one of his sons playing on the team. And I was an assistant coach just in the background, but I had an opportunity to be around Gavin from third grade on up, coached his youth teams, coached his AAU teams, and then making the move here to Crestview. And we've even talked about it, Gavin and I have. If we stay at Taze Valley, Gavin's not a varsity player his freshman year. He would have played JV, and we had a really good team coming back. Just the way things worked out here at Crestview with the talent that we had lost and what we needed a guy to be able to get us into our offense and basically get the ball to Kalen. And I know it was one of his goals his whole life is to be a varsity basketball player as a freshman. I'm going to say handle things me differently than what my dad was never really, really tough on me, very loving as far as I want you to do the best you can, but never really stern. And I don't remember a whole lot of times in basketball as a player under my dad where I just got lit up. And to a fault, probably, I was probably way too tough on Gavin when he was younger. And I really tried these last couple years to kind of step back and just let him play. He's going to make mistakes, but I can't have him trying to play as a kid that is trying not to make mistakes. I need him to play as a kid that's trying to make plays. And I think that's the biggest thing I've learned the last couple years is just allow Gavin to be a player on our team and not you have to be perfect. And I think because of that, he really grew his last couple of years in our system. He shot the ball crazy well for us this year. And I don't think he wasn't really worried about what the result was going to be after the play was made. And I think early on a little bit too much afraid plays and what if I make a mistake. I think if I could do things over, I would have done that when he was younger, because basketball is a game of mistakes. It was just one of those things that, you know, he's my son. I get a chance to talk to him about it all the time. And I probably didn't do a great job when he was young, and I wish I would have done it a little bit better. But as far as the way things turned out and the type of player he is, but more importantly, the type of kid he is, he's a great kid, very, very caring kid, very hardworking kid. I think he had a, I hope he had a great experience playing under me. But I remember talking to him. Our senior moms had us all write letters to the players that they are going to read on the way to the state tournament. So, you know, I'm a dad on the team, even though I'm the coach. So I get to write a letter to Gavin about, you know, his final two games. And I told him from a standpoint as a dad and coach, this is kind of bittersweet. It's what we've always wanted to do. We've always wanted to make it to state, and we're here. But I know there's only two more games left. That's the most we're going to have together again. And then I'm going to have to set you loose, and someone else is going to coach you. And that's going to be hard to deal with. And I had mentioned that to you when we had talked earlier this summer. This summer has been weird without him there. You know, I haven't had him not be at one of my camps or be a leader for one of my camps or be in our summer stuff forever. It's been, you know, since he's a little kid that he hasn't been there every day at the basketball that I'm involved in. And it's been different. And I think, you know, it's, he's ready. He's time. He's ready to move on and play under somebody else. But it was incredibly special. I would change some of the ways I did things for sure. But I think in the end, it all worked out about as special as it could for both of us being able to play in a state title game, his last game, and me had an opportunity to coach him in his last game.
Well, Coach, as you go through the journey that you just described, and lots of coaches go through it, everybody's going to handle it a little differently. I like to wrap up almost every episode by asking this question, is that, you know, as you've gone through the journey, you can reflect on it. Do you recall things about the process? I mean, did you intentionally find ways to align your why with coaching, the why you do this? When we all start, we coach because we're junkies about the game, we're passionate about it, and we can't imagine life without it. But I'm assuming that it's almost always the case that as we do it longer, the reason we do it evolves a little bit. And when you get the chance to make it a family affair, it certainly forces some evolution there. Can you talk about ways that you try to be intentional about balancing your passion and your drive and your want to succeed with your role as a family man and the importance of faith in your life? And I mean, how do you create that balance?
I tell you, it is extremely, extremely difficult. And you know, as a head coach, because on each Friday and Saturday night, you want to make sure your team is as prepared as possible to be successful. And to do that, I think, you know, everybody that's involved in the head coaching role, you put a ton of time into that, and you don't want to miss anything as far as preparation goes. Do I need to watch another game film? You know, do I need to talk to another coach? And what all can I do to make sure you're 100% prepared on game night? And to do that and then still make sure you're there for your family, to make sure that you have family time and it's not just all basketball time, is extremely tough. And, you know, as like you said, as far as reflecting on that, each year is a little bit different as far as what you need to do preparation-wise. I was blessed the last couple years that I've had teams that, from an X's and O standpoint, from a Crestview, what we're going to do, have been phenomenal and very sharp. So I didn't have to worry about our sides of things. And then they were incredibly engaged on their own, too, from a scouting report. Huddle has made things so easy with you know, we can get film and my guys can watch film and we break down clips for them and they can see the other team sets. So I think technology, it can be good and bad. And I've had great assistant coaches. Steven Rickard, my assistant coach this year, was the huddle guy for us. He would clip the other team sets and clip their defensive, you know, stuff that they did. So our guys didn't have to watch a whole game. They can watch just little clips of that. So I've been blessed to have people like that help me out. But, I'm not going to lie to you. When season's in, it is a really, really tough time to make sure that you are balanced and not just 100% in basketball. Because if you would talk to my wife, when it gets February, there are times that, hey, basketball is almost over, and she's probably happy that it's almost over. This year, not the case. You know, it was special, and she was getting a chance to experience as a senior mom and living, you know, through Gavin's success that he was on the court and how thrilled I know she was for everything that was going on. But it is crazy tough to make sure that you keep everything in perspective, that at the end of the day, it's a high school basketball game. I know you want to be successful at it, but these kids are going to go on and have successful lives, and you want to make sure that the main thing they get out of it isn't just the X's and O's. It's the core values of your program and making sure that they become men that do things the right way. And I think the more you clarify that as a head coach, that, hey, it is an important game. It's a lot of what you do, but it is also just a game. You need to make sure that the other priorities in your life are taken care of so that, you know, things don't fall apart from that side and all you have is basketball. Like I said, I'm tremendously lucky that my wife is 100% on board to keep me grounded. And I'll be honest, she'll let me know when things are getting a little bit too deep in basketball and making sure that, hey, you got kids here at home and you got a wife here at home and you need to make sure that this is right too. So I've been blessed to have a person by my side the whole time that keeps me balanced and allows me to love and do this to a high level, but also make sure that, hey, you take care of your family too.
I got a question that's just, we'll pretend like nobody else is going to hear the answer to this. Tougher coaching your nephew or coaching your son?
Oh man, that's a 50-50 because it's tough with your son because as good as I could, and like I said, I'll reflect on this, I wasn't always great at it, but once we left the gym, I wanted it to be just when he wanted to talk about it, and I didn't always do a good job. My dad was great at it. I was okay at it. I got better as I got older. With Kalen, coaching Kalen was just unique because I don't know if I'll ever have an opportunity to coach someone that was so athletically blessed as what he was. You know, 6'8", extremely athletic, bouncy kid that could do things that I've never had a player do. I remember a play his senior year. We went to actually, it was his junior year, so it'd been my first year here. We go to Salina and run a ball screen for him, and he goes down the lane and takes off from just where the dotted line used to be and went up and threw down a dunk that I'm like, holy, I've coached a long time. And I've never coached a kid that could do what he just did, but then also getting in his face because he didn't hedge a ball screen the way I wanted him to hedge a ball screen. You know, just the mix between the two and trying to get him to understand that, hey, you're unbelievably blessed, but when you go to the next level, everybody's going to be blessed just like you are. And you got to do things exactly right. That it was, yeah, both of them gave me challenges, but I'm so fortunate to have an opportunity to coach both of them. And it was special. And like you said, the toughest thing about the whole coaching thing is I did leave two nephews that I was going to have an opportunity to coach at Taze Valley, come home and way, whether we stayed at Taze Valley or came home. But yeah, both of them were very special to coach and provided me with different challenges for sure.
Well, Coach, I'm glad you're going to get a chance to reset things and get some time away from it. It's going to be here before you know it. You're going to be cranking things back up. We had talked about doing this for a while, so I really, really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and chat. And I'm not kidding. I maybe down the road one of these days, you come to Northern on a long Saturday, we'll catch a game and then maybe sit down and record it. We'll do an Ohio State Experience podcast. I think it'd be a blast.
It would definitely be a blast. I'm so appreciative that you had me on today and have an opportunity to tell my story because I've listened to a lot of your podcasts and I've had an opportunity to listen to some great coaches and hear their story. And it's just interesting. You think of the different, you know, I grew up in the, my dad was a guy around here that everybody looked up to, but Bob Arnson and Fran Gilbo, and then have an opportunity to hear a Brett Norris talk that I learned under, you know, Sean Powell, who played for us at at Lima Shawnee and just hear their perspective on basketball and life. And obviously, high state years were very fond to me, and a lot of different stories there that I'm sure we could talk a long time about. But very appreciative that you had me on, and I'm glad I had an opportunity to share with you a little bit about my story.
Well, let's make sure we catch up soon, huh, Coach?
That sounds great. Sounds great. Hopefully with my son playing at Northern, me being over that way, we can definitely hook up a lot.
We'll plan on it for sure. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, John.
Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life Podcast.